Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the October 11 edition of Commodity Week. The U.S. government remains shuttered, but it seems fairly active in the marketplace. U.S. EPA leaked a document, or at least someone did, about ethanol in the RFS for 2014 and some future years. It appears China was in the market for a purchase, though we're not sure about that one. And the combines are really rolling in the Midwest. We'll try to figure out what it all means today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan O'Brien of K-State. That's Kansas State University Extension. He's an ag economist there. Our panelists today in studio include Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at agrigold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, we'll start the session a little bit differently this time around because it's our fall pledge drive, and no matter whether you listen on the local radio station or one of our commercial affiliates, or if you listen online, we'd like you to dial this number right now at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support for agricultural programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. You can listen online, as you know, at willag.org, and many of you do. Many of you listen on one of our radio stations. No matter how you get our programming, we hope that you will support it. Your director of agricultural programming, Dave Dickey, and I both like a single level, $120 and above. You're in the field. Now would be a good time to pull the trigger. Just dial the number at 217-244-9455. If you have auto steer, I suppose that might be okay. If not, wait till you stop. 217-244-9455. However you do it, make sure you tell the operator on the other end that you are calling in support of agriculture, and in this case, make sure you mention Commodity Week 2. The number again is 217-244-9455. You can call in with a Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express if you want. If you want to write a check, that's fine. If you just want to call in and say, I'm going to make a pledge in this amount, that works perfectly well too. Again, that number to call, and I'll tell you more times in, well, just a few minutes, at 217-244-9455. Let's begin our discussion with this question. I would like to not deal with the crop that's being harvested right now, Bill Gentry, but the one that will be put in the ground next spring, 2014. A few months ago, many of you said, hey, we ought to think about selling some of that crop or much lower. But I'm still hearing, hey, we may want to think about selling of that 2014 crop for corn. What's your call?
About 6 or 8 weeks ago, we started in getting folks to start thinking about next year's crop with margins coming down. Big supply situation this year. Carryout could continue to grow with 2 billion bushels. A short call, long put strategy was something we looked at pretty strongly. Basically puts a floor under you, but it still gives you some upside potential. 15% to 35% is what we were looking at for both corn and beans. We have backed away a little bit from that strategy short term because of the clarity of the marketplace. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to assess market or acreage considerations next spring. But I do think if you know your cost of seed, your cost of land, your cost of machinery, that making that 15 to 35% sale is still something to consider.
And Bill Mayer.
Yeah, we've actually been doing some 2014 sales. We've been using a some options-based cash contracts that gives us a little bit of a premium over the straight futures prices, you know, instead of just an HTA. And we're trying to be fairly conservative on the percentages that we do, keeping it, you know, under 20%, let's put it that way.
By the way, I like your St. Louis Cardinals hat. I just made note of that.
We're going for them.
All right. And from Archer Financial Services, Scott Harms.
Well, the corn market doesn't have a real good story to it, and it's starting to come to grips with the fact that this year's crop is going to be continue to grow. So over the next couple of months, it's going to be a situation where, as a producer, you're going to be more comfortable being hedged, having some hedges in place than not. It's likely the delay in the USDA reports likely delays the break to corn. We don't know how much downside there is. But as a producer, I think you want to have at least some hedge protection on. You'll be more comfortable in that position. We're currently at 60% price, but we're going to be nimble, and we're going to be looking to take profits on those positions down around the 450 level basis, D's 14 corn.
In Chicago at the CME Group this week, December corn had a high at $4.49¾. It's low at $4.32½. It settled 10 cents lower at $4.33¼. December, by the way, of next year at $4.75½, finished 9½ cents lower. What are you hearing from producers, Bill Gentry, about the corn crop they're bringing in this year?
Corn crop so far has probably been better than expected. I think the crop did not have much stress and went through the reproductive phase without really any kind of a challenge. And so what we're hearing early is that a lot of these guys are going to have farm averages that are records.
Is the key Iowa and the western part of the United States?
I really think it is, Todd. I think that's going to be the factor that ends up making the market move from where we're currently at. I think Illinois's got good crops, average or above crops. We see some variation still, but you know, better than expected, I guess, depends on the expectations. But I think when we get into the Iowa crop really hard, which we haven't yet, I think that's going to give us some guidelines. I think trend yield like 158 or so on the corn nationally. I think that's kind of where we're at right now as far as where we may come in.
Early in the week, it appears, Scott, that China purchased U.S. corn for import to the tune of 420,000 metric tons. That for delivery next year. Does this give you hope USDA's exports for corn are lower than they might actually be for the marketing year?
It does, and that's going to be the key to the market and how quickly we can climb out of this hole. When you get a crop this size, you're not going to have a V-bottom. We're going to have to work our way out of it. The night that the government shutdown took place, there were about 40,000 contracts of corn traded overnight. That was pretty significant, and there were a couple of nights this week where soybeans actually traded about 40,000 contracts. So there is some demand. Perhaps it's just coming in under the darkness of the USDA shutdown. So there is some demand coming on. I think once the USDA shutdown ends, we're going to see some announcements in the trade.
Can you give me some parameters? What's 40,000 contracts mean in the overnight trade?
Well, lately in the corn, it's been closer to 10,000 contracts. I mean, it's a very quiet trade right now, but that's a pretty significant jump over what we've seen the last couple months.
Okay. So when we look at this corn market for the near term, for that which is coming into the combine head this week and in the future couple of weeks, should producers consider selling some of that over the scale now and then storing some later, or doing it the other way around?
I think realistically, storing some is probably a situation because the basis level is likely to improve going forward. We've had some guys looking at filling contracts, and then once that's taken care of, go ahead and put some in the bin. The basis pattern has already slipped off. You know, the early premiums are pretty much gone, and now it's kind of hunt and peck. When one elevator gets enough, then they pull their bid back, but somebody else in the area kind of perks up and basically redirects the flow.
I guess I'm kind of on the side at these current levels of storing the corn. Of course, it depends on what you did up to this point. But when I look at the weekly and I look at the daily December charts, I mean, I think this 425 area has got some pretty strong support. We could go through that. We could push it down below that. But I guess in the short term, I'd expect to see, as we get out of harvest, get towards that Thanksgiving period, that we could see the typical, more of a typical year where you see a little bit of a comeback in the corn prices?
Yeah, I think in the soybeans, the answer is relatively simple. With the carry in the market, we've seen a lot of producers, especially the trucks that come across the scale in Oakland, filled with a lot of beans. Farmers are moving the beans to the market, taking advantage of the inverse in the market, and storing as much corn as possible. The only problem with the size of this year's crop, especially in this area, is the last 10 to 20% of the corn, that excessive, the corn over expectations, maybe hit the market at the tail end of harvest, October, first week of November, and that may apply a little more pressure.
Yeah, I think Scott brings up a good point there, and I think two things. One is that you need to adjust. If you thought you had a certain percentage sold and you got bigger yields, adjust your percentages up if you need to sell more. And the second thing is, I don't think you can just store corn and forget it. I think you have to take advantage of the carry and go out there and do the old storage hedge like we did in the past years.
July wheat this week, a 692.5 settlement price for the soft red, down a penny and a quarter. The hard red at 737 was up 4 cents. Let's do transition to the soybeans, where the futures had a high in the nearby November of $13.5¾ on the week, the low at $12.66. We remember this is the weekly low on high. The trade from Friday to Friday changed at down 28¼ cents at $12.66¾ in the November. November of next year at $11.58. Down 16¼. October bean meal off $9.30 at $4.22. October bean oil at $40.11. That was down 12 cents on the week. So in the soybeans, are the numbers coming in as well as they are for the corn?
They certainly are. I think realistically, we've had some guys crowding in the upper 70s, not too many people dipping down into the 30s. So far, the yields are standing in. As far as the bean market this week, it kind of was three different things going on. The meal oil spread kind of saw some liquidation. That kind of took some of the vim and vigor out of the bean market. The yield numbers were good. And also the little slip from the EPA or whatever didn't help beans very much today.
The trade change in the December corn and November beans was about as it has been or would be expected on drop for this week. Do you expect that ratio to change anytime soon?
No, I guess I'm not sure that I do. The thing that gets me on the soybeans is, and I think it's good from a farmer viewpoint, we continue to have pretty decent bases here. Sitting here today, doing this show, I mean, we've had a pretty good run of beans. We still see the basis level staying in there pretty decent. So I think that tells us that there's still some pipeline filling that's going on here.
Yeah, again, the demand for beans is from China is forefront, I think, on traders' minds. Today's sell-off was tied to soybean oil, was tied to that biodiesel announcement. Market got tripped up, but soybeans should have real good support down in this area, at least in our opinion, unless you can come up with a national yield, until we see a national yield above 42 bushel an acre. The tight stocks out of South America for the next until they get new crop harvest could send whatever demand from China, and they've got great crush margins. They could send that right to the U.S. And again, I'll say that after we come back from the government shutdown, we may see some of that announcements right away.
Scott mentioned a document that was leaked from U.S. EPA. It's just a leak, by the way. But it does suggest EPA and OMB are considering lower RFS mandates for 2014 and beyond. It would impact corn ethanol and soybean futures. What's your take of the news?
Well, I think there's a couple of takes on it. One is it needs to be validated. We don't know, it's August 26th was the date on it. The second thing is, even if it is valid, there's a process that has to be gone through in order for those things to be enacted, from a proposal to, public hearings and quite a bit of work that needs to get done to actually implementing those, and a pretty good fight, I imagine, between the biofuels industry and the energy industry. So, I mean, I think it's important. I think it did weigh on the market, but we have a ways to go before we know what it really means.
Exactly. It's going to be a process. We've been dealing with the biofuels and the ethanol for a number of years. We've had some short crops and had some challenging situations. But going forward, maybe we're just going to find a little bit different way of managing the situation so that we don't have that fear of fuel and feed or fuel and food.
Yeah, and again, the implementation of a lower mandate, is, as Bill says, is going to take some time. But the also impact is you know, currently we're on a pace of about 13.6 billion bushel, 13.6 billion gallons of ethanol produced, which is well below, which is really below the mandated number of 13.8 as it is. So the impact, there's been some talk that it's going to be as much as 500 million bushel adjustment. It's probably more like 220, and that's if you take the straight numbers as they are.
Well, and when we come back, we'll talk more about that biofuels and the U.S. EPA document with Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State University, located in Colby, Kansas. Just a couple of items as we wrap up the front end of our program. On Tuesday of next week, we will have a live webinar on our Will Ag website that you can listen to on your smartphone if you just plug it in to a set of headphones while you're in the combine, because you don't need to see the video there. And we will take up RINs, renewable identification numbers for ethanol, and the changes U.S. EPA might be thinking about with Scott Irwin and Daryl Good and Jeremy Martin from the Union of Concerned Scientists. That all happened next Tuesday. It's a webinar for not on the radio, but you can certainly listen to it off our Will Ag website. One other note, if you haven't dialed in yet with your financial support, now might be a really good time to do that. The number to call is 217-244-9455. Make a pledge of financial support to the agricultural programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. This last week was warm and with widespread rain. Statewide temperatures have been 4 degrees above average. We had widespread rain last weekend across the state. The heaviest rains fell around Chicago and in southern Illinois, south of I-70. Those areas received between 1 and 3 inches. The rest of the states got closer to half an inch. The National Weather Service forecast indicates that a cold front will push through the state on Saturday with rain and thunderstorms ahead of it and cooler, drier air behind it. The potential rainfall totals will be modest, mostly in the range of 1/4 to 1/2 inches. Rain should clear out of Illinois by Sunday morning. A second chance for rain is on Monday night and Tuesday as another system moves through the state. Daytime highs on Saturday will be in the 70s, overnight lows will be in the low 40s, highs on Sunday will be in the upper 60s in the north and the low 70s in the south, overnight lows will be in the 40s. By next week, daytime temperatures will be in the 50s and 60s during the day, and at nighttime, lows will be in the 40s and 50s. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecasts show colder and wetter conditions are in store for us. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This weekend, we're kicking off our fall pledge drive, and to encourage you to support WILL and our agricultural services, a group of loyal ag friends have gone together to create the Fall Ag Fund Challenge. If we hear from at least 100 pledges this week that mention WILL Ag, we can add $2,000 to our pledge total. Thanks to AgriGold, Bates Commodity, Stuart Peterson, the Champaign County Branch, and Strategic Farm Marketing for helping to make this fall's Ag Fun Challenge possible. Follow their lead and pledge your support right now. It's really simple to do. Just call this number, 217-244-9455, and pledge your financial support to willag.org. Don't wait. Start right now. Dial the number 217-244-9455 and make sure you tell the operator your pledge is in support of agriculture at WILL. This is the October 11 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today in studio include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities. He's from Lafayette, Indiana. Scott Harms from Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois. and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. On the phone line, Dan O'Brien from K-State Extension. He's located in Colby, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, and thanks so much for being on the program, Dan.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, let's start off, because you and I, once a month on Tuesdays, during the closing market report, talk a bit about agricultural energies, and I expected to talk more with you about corn and soybean prices, but we'll get to that. U.S. EPA has a document that's floating around now that deals with the RFS and some potential changes. What did you make of the document and its potential impact?
Well, I think the numbers have been well explained by your panelists, so, in large degree, already. It is interesting when you, if the numbers that we're getting, that are getting reported hold true, as was indicated earlier, again, so the agency would call for the use of 13 billion gallons of conventional corn-based ethanol and 2.21 billion gallons of advanced biofuels, such as biodiesel, and that would be down from 13.8 for corn and 2.75 for the advanced biofuels side of things. So I think without question, it would be a muting of the growth of the of that demand item. It's interesting that it's I think we'd still be looking at about, at least if preliminary calculations hold true and accounting for net exports of ethanol, we'd still be looking at 4.7 to 4.9 billion bushels of corn to be used, and probably as much as anything, as you look at where corn has corn ethanol usage has grown to as a primary driving growth item in our corn balance sheets. If this change by the EPA is adopted, and if it withstands a very possible legal challenge going forward, then we'd be looking at somewhat of a muted growth or steady sideways move of, again, 4.8, 4.9 billion gallon billion bushels being used for this market year and the next couple. So I think it's thought provoking as to how growth in ethanol with its government mandated, you know, very inelastic demand has been such a driver in our response of the corn prices to any of these changes on the supply demand side. I don't know that we are going to see any catastrophic drop in corn prices for this alone. But what it does do is take away that projected growth in that item that would continue to be factored into increased acreage, increased need to supply the ethanol side of the market, and probably lead to a lower crop acreage and expected production pattern in the next several years than we would have had if this holds true and we go forward off into the future and if we were to go forward off in the future with the continued growth side. So I think this will have. Yes, some ramifications this year, but it'd be probably the most thought-provoking aspect of this to think about what it will do for corn production and acreage and all of that as we move off into the next 2 years.
Certainly. As we look down the road and think about alternatives, let's say the ethanol or the biodiesel is a fairly profitable venture here domestically, what sort of changes do you think we could see on an export front?
Are you talking about corn overall?
No, ethanol and both ethanol and biodiesel.
Well, I think sideways availability would probably leave us not well. At the interest of looking at a deeper analysis, I think where we're at right now, you know, in terms of ethanol exports, we probably would stay at that mode, or at least that's my initial response. I think we need to look at what's happening from South American sources as well as our own sources to figure out what that balance will be down the road. You know, we hear reports of I think just today in the news talking about the possibility of increased development of sugarcane acreage in the Amazon area in South America, and that, you know, if that comes into play and other factors like that, then you could see that coming into the market and affecting the ethanol import export balance here in the U.S.
Dan, what do you see as far as looking at some of your stuff earlier, as far as what's your numbers, what do you feel comfortable with as far as carry out and, you know, supply as well as demand on the corn in this USDA reported we didn't get today.
that we didn't get today, yeah. Well, I think that, of course, the USDA's projection of 155 bushels per acre and their acreage numbers had been left unchanged. And I think for us, we've been, here at K-State, we've been trying to figure out whether the USDA will make any tangible adjustments in their acreage numbers or not. And, you know, there had been coming out of the RMA, pardon me, not RMA, from the Farm Service Agency, a projection of about 3.5, 3.6 million acres of corn actually not being planted. So will the USDA come back in what would have been the October report, but now later on in the November report, will they scale that down? Well, if they would, if they would at the type of yield levels we're talking about, we'd be looking at 2 or 3 million acres less harvested acreage times 150 bushels, 160 bushels an acre. You're talking about 300 to 350 million bushels of corn that could be taken off of the production number. So I think that given that we're looking at 13.5 to 14 billion bushels, or maybe more by some people's calculations, still that would be a record high. Would have some impact on the corn market, probably not enough to take us out of these low levels we're seeing at harvest, but it would have an impact on the carryout numbers. So it's probably the difference between 1.6 to 2 billion bushels carryover ending stocks, and probably ending stocks figures between, say, 12.5 to 15%. Again, if the yields in the Iowa, southern Minnesota area, and off into the Dakotas, if they are somewhat lower than expected, well, then that would be that'd be one more moderating influence on the low side. And frankly, the numbers we put together are probably influenced by some conversations I've had and then listening to reports from folks in Iowa, Bob Wisner, some of the people I've worked with in the past that have expressed concerns throughout the year as to how those final yields in for a good part of Iowa corn will come out. Well, I guess at this time we don't want to just rely on anecdotal evidence, but it'll be really interesting to see, as one of you had mentioned before, just how we finally end up with that last 10, 15, 20% of production, if it comes in at the same over expectations level, or if we start to decline a bit and end up with something below 14 billion, maybe 13.75, or even if the acreage numbers get pared back down to 13.5, well, given our expectations now of 14 that are growing to 14 and 14 plus, well, that would lend some support temporarily to the market, but probably still wouldn't get us far out of this carrying charge storage situation that we'll be seeing for the next that we're anticipating right now, probably through February, March of 2014.
Dan, quick question. I think it'd be helpful for the producers to know, in your opinion, as far as when do you believe the lows might be forged in this market, assuming that we slip down towards the $4.20, $4 level that a lot of analysts seem to want to talk about. How quickly can we climb out of this hole and when to help producers do some marketing in the over the winter months?
Really a thought-provoking question. Without doubt, right now we're getting reports of strong supplies, and the very and with that, not a lot of information on usage. But yet, this would be a great time if someone were discreet about it to buy a good amount of corn. I think one or two of you had mentioned that earlier in terms of some of the export pace. I think low prices are finding some ready buyers, and if anything, you wonder about the human factor coming in on ag producers themselves. How willing, unless they're forced to for cash flow purposes, are they going to be? How willing are they going to be to actually sell at these prices? So I think that here in the Western Corn Belt, I guess the mantra we hear is that we'll be doing a lot of storage of grain for a while for the next several months. So I don't doubt that we'll see periods of time here up front where we're spiking lower, but I don't know how much lower we can get if we don't have willing sellers. So I would wonder about that factor coming into play and limiting us from moving much farther below the current levels we're at until we find ourselves past the first of the year to the place where we actually are forced to sell some grain for cash flow purposes. And if that be the case, then we would probably we could find ourselves being fairly level off past the first of the year, again, through the February doldrums we so often see here in the Western Corn Belt, and then trying to figure out what happens off into the spring months of 2014.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State Extension out of Colby, Kansas. A final, very quick word from our panelist in studio, Bill Gentry.
Be safe out there, and don't forget to make your pledge call on the turns.
And Bill Mayer.
Yes, be safe. Watch the exports on the corn as we move forward through the next several months. I think that's going to be a key as to the corn market.
And Scott Harms.
Option volatilities are real cheap right now. There's an opportunity in both these and March options to buy some cheap put protection, roll out of your profitable hedges on a spike lower, and be safe.
Now is the time to dial this number, 217-244-9455. Pledge your financial support. That wraps up Commodity Week.